On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Amid all the brouhaha over Harry Potter and Twilight, the Hunger Games trilogy may have snuck up on you. Maybe you noticed it sticking out of your child's backpack. Maybe it was on the nightstand of a grown-up friend, on your nightstand. Well, it's been a huge bestseller in the movie, opening all over today, looks set to be a blockbuster. It's about a violent world screwed up by grown-ups where hungry teenagers fight to the death on reality TV. Hey, that sounds almost like our world. This hour on Point, the runaway success and meaning of the Hunger Games. You can join the conversation. Are your children reading it? Do you shudder over dinner when they tell you who killed whom and how? Do you get the appeal? Are you hooked yourself? What's the message in the huge popularity of this dystopic tale? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Later in the hour, we'll get an early review of the movie, out today. But first, the tale itself and its power. Joining me now from New York is Lev Grossman, senior writer and book reviewer at Time Magazine, author of several works of fantasy himself, including the best-selling Magician King. He recently read The Hunger Games for his book group. Lev Grossman, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks. Hi, Tom.
Hi. And with us from South Bend, Indiana, is Betsy Cornwell, a graduate student at the University of Notre Dame, former editor and contributor to the magazine Teen Inc., author of the soon-to-be-published work of adult young adult fiction called Tides. She first read The Hunger Games a year or so ago and has been rereading it this past week with her creative writing workshop. Betsy, welcome. Great to have you here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to have listeners who know all about this and others who don't. Let me just read. This is a little summary from Salon, so people can kind of begin to plug into this. And it says this is set in some kind of future, far future, dystopian, post-apocalyptic world, some version of America, Panem, it's called, where children from slave communities practically are forced to slaughter one another on television for the amusement of the wealthy. The book begins with the 74th annual Hunger Games lottery in this hardscrabble mining region of what's called District 12. The heroine, 16-year-old Katniss Everdeen, played by Jennifer Lawrence in the movie, she's skilled with a bow and arrow. Her family survives on her poaching. In this lottery, her little sister is selected as a tribute, that is practically a death sentence for someone so young, to go to these games. Katniss volunteers to go to the games in her place. She's whisked away to the decadent capital. She undergoes training and quite a makeover as well, alongside a fellow tribute, Peeta, the baker's son. All of it builds up to the games themselves, conducted in a big fenced-off wilderness preserve in which the tributes battle for food, supplies, and weapons, while invisible cameras broadcast their every move for an audience who watches on. It's kind of like the voyeurs watching them kill one another. Lev Grossman, are you surprised that this has become such a big bestseller?
I should lie and say no, but the truth is I am surprised. As often happens, I was sent the books before they came out, mm-hmm. 5 or 6 months before they came out, and I read the first one, Hunger Games, and I thought, no, this is too grim. It's too grim. It's too violent. It's too depressing. There's no way these things are going to catch on. Thereby proving once again why I am not a professional publisher.
Right. And there it is, 26 million. Betsy, what is it about? You're kind of in the heart of the generation this is aimed at, maybe just a couple years older, but people are reading this of all ages. What do you think it is about this? It's the young who grabbed onto it first. What is it about this pretty violent tale, pretty grim, you think, that got its teeth into people?
Well, I think there are a couple things that make it really appealing for young readers. There is a lot of violence that we see in the media these days. I mean, I don't think that that's necessarily so much more true for our generation than maybe for some others. But kids have always sort of witnessed violence and seen it happening in the world, or, you know, unfortunately, some children have to deal with violence in their own lives too. And I think books and stories are a really important way for young people to process violence and other things that they find sort of difficult to think about and deal with. But children also, you know, in their imaginative play and in their storytelling to each other, can be kind of violent in their imaginations themselves. So I think there is something that appeals to children a lot about a violent story.
Liv, can describe, if you would, the grimness here, about the setup, about the way it's described, about how these kids have to fight and kill one another. I mean, just give us a sense of what it was that made you say, I don't think so, too much.
Well, of course, it begins in a state of extreme sort of grinding poverty. You meet Katniss in the context of this, you know, poverty-stricken District 12 she lives in, where everybody has to make their living with this backbreaking mining. And then, yes, she goes into the arena. And the violence in the book, I mean, there's violence. We see violence everywhere. We're a nation at war. We see it in the media. But the violence in the Hunger Games has a slightly different quality. It's slightly more explicit than I've really ever seen in terms of entertainment pitched at this age group. You see the knife go in. You see, you know, the girl get stung by the mutant wasps, and you see her flesh liquefy before your eyes. It's real horror stuff, and it moves the needle. I'd never seen anything quite like it before, and I thought, no, this is too much. People are not going to be able to consume this, but of course they were able to.
24 young people chosen every year, Betsy, and only one is supposed to survive. I mean, they're literally all killing each other. You know, people of a certain age, minds will go back to Lord of the Flies.
Sure.
But here we are with a deliberate, you know, they are in there to kill one another, and they do. And only one is supposed to be left standing. And all this on reality TV for the pleasure of sort of the entertainment of those not in the sort of gladiatorial combat. I mean, that is a pretty rough setup, even if we've got a lot of violence in the world today.
Oh, absolutely. And I do think that idea of the public arena is a big part of that, too. I think kids today are thinking a lot about competition in a public arena and about their public appearances and how they might seem to outside viewers, you know, right, with reality TV is such a big part of our lives and, you know, Facebook and Twitter and things like that. Kids are always thinking about how they're presenting themselves to a much more public forum than previous generations might have experienced. So I think that's probably something that speaks to them a lot as well.
And even going into these fights in this kind of fenced wilderness, huge arena, they're also thinking about how they look, how they can win the sympathy of the audience. Here's a scene from the movie. This is coming out today, where Katniss Everdeen, played by Jennifer Lawrence, she was fantastic in Winter's Bone. She's volunteered herself to represent her district in her sister's stead in the Hunger Games. She's brooding alone in a room here when Cinna, played by rock guitarist Lenny Kravitz, introduces himself. And he's to be her stylist to dress her pretty flamboyantly for this dangerous reality TV show that she's about to take part in here from the movie.
I'm sorry that this happened to you. I'm here to help you in any way that I can.
Most people just congratulate me.
Well, I don't see the point in that. So tonight, they have the tribute parade. Take you out and show you off to the world.
So you're here to make me look pretty?
I'm here to help you make an impression. Now, usually they dress people in the clothes from their district.
Yeah, we're always coal miners.
Yeah, but I don't want to do that. I want to do something that they're going to remember. Did they explain about trying to get sponsors?
Yeah, but I'm not very good at making friends.
We'll see.
Trying to get sponsors while she's on her way to have to fight to the death. Describe that dynamic in the book for us, sponsors and sympathy from the audience. I mean, it's a really vivid combination of reality TV world that we all know and something post-apocalyptic that we don't quite know yet.
It's very interesting. I think Betsy's mentioning social media, Facebook and Twitter, is very much to the point, much more so than in the past. The things we do in our daily lives are visible to a mass audience. I actually think it's more about social media than about reality television. Mm-hmm. I think it's a tiny bit of a red herring. But this sense that we are living for an audience, we're performing, even when we're off stage, we're performing. It's a powerful, really powerful metaphor for what it feels like to be alive as a kid today and also as an adult.
But the gruesomeness that you describe in the direct sort of hand-to-hand combat here, mean, the voyeurism or the looking on also has a kind of gruesome quality, not least because of the power differential in it. It's the powerless who are tossed in here to fight to the death.
I think it's very interesting. And I said earlier that I thought the reality television thing was a bit of a red herring. There's a paradox in these books, which is not really resolved, which is that we are reading the books and we are really as much in the place of the audience as we are in Katniss's place. We are invited to enjoy the thrills of the arena.
Sort of like the privileged, powerful audience here in the book that's exempt from the fighting itself.
That's right. So we're really in both places. We're the part of the oligarchy in the capital, and also we're in Katniss's place, and we do enjoy it, or I do it enjoy it anyway. I found it very thrilling, which is disturbing. I realized that I was enjoying the spectacle that I'm not supposed to enjoy, and that's a paradox that it's sort of not really resolved within the scope of the novel. But it's a very alive one and very relevant to life today.
Betsy, do you feel like your generation has responded to this book in part because it feels it's been handed a brutal world?
I mean, I think that's probably part of a lot of young adult literature that has this premise of a world that is already corrupted when it's handed to you. But I think, you know, this book does a nice job of not saying that, you know, teenagers are entirely innocent in all of this and it's just adults that have sort of handed it down to them. You know, I think the characters in The Hunger Games aren't these sort of paragons of virtue. They're dealing with these complex issues and complicated problems, and they sort of respond to them in a complicated and flawed way. And I think that's done well in the books.
Stand by. Betsy Cornwell there in South Bend, Lev Grossman in New York, here from the companion soundtrack to the movie, Arcade Fire. We're talking about The Hunger Games. Listeners, you can join us. Has this trilogy plowed through your circle, your family, your kids' backpack? Has The Hunger Games wave hit you? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about The Hunger Games, the blockbuster book franchise. It's the big screen today. A generation and more has already been steeped in the dystopian survival challenge and violence of the story. Lev Grossman is with us this hour, senior writer, book reviewer at Time Magazine, author himself of The Magician King and The Magician's Big New York Times bestsellers in the fantasy realm. Betsy Cornwell is with us from South Bend, Indiana, grad student at the University of Notre Dame, former editor at Teen Inc., author of the soon-to-be-released Tides, out there in the young adult reader world herself with her own work. You can join the conversation this hour. Has the Hunger Games wave hit you? What's the power, the appeal of this story right now? Does it speak especially to a post-9/11 generation somehow? And what's it all say about survival, voyeurism, love, rebellion? What's it say about the brutality of power, about reality TV and social media in a new generation? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Here's a little montage from the trailer of the movie out today. From the moment that Katniss Everdeen's younger sister Primrose, played by Willow Shields, is picked for the reality TV deathmatch and Katniss volunteers herself to save her sister, Katniss and the other young people in the story, in the film, are trying to survive and do right in a screwed-up world that adults are raising and killing them in.
Primrose Everdeen.
No! I volunteer! I volunteer as tribute.
You're stronger than they are.
There's 24 of us, Gail. Only one comes out.
No!
Take care of them, Gail. Whatever you do, don't let them starve.
I just keep wishing I could think of a way to show them that they don't own me. If I'm gonna die, I want to still be me.
I just can't afford to think like that.
A trailer from the Hunger Games movie. Betsy Cornwell, explain the tribute piece for us, and why are the powerful in this story being so brutal, so cruel to most of the people here? There's a hint that there's been a rebellion somewhere in the history here. There's a kind of deliberate cowing or punishment going on?
Yeah, that's right. The idea is that about 75 years ago, these impoverished 12 districts sort of rose up against that decadent capital and tried to have a revolution, and they failed. And so as a sort of penance or punishment, every year, two teenagers from each district are sort of chosen by lottery to go fight to the death in the Hunger Games.
What do you see in that power relationship, Lev? Is that one that's also resonating these days?
Well, I think so. Not so much necessarily in a political way, but there's this very clever way in which the people in the capital, they're punishing the districts, they're killing their children, but they're also enlisting the districts in that cruelty. They're saying, "Aren't you enjoying this spectacle? Don't you enjoy the cruelty too? You're just like us in a way. You're not better than us." And that's very real to me in terms of the of what it's like really to be alive today in this kind of technological panopticon we inhabit. Mm-hmm. We are watched, and we don't like it necessarily, but we're also watchers. We're all voyeurs. We're being spied upon, but we're also spies at the same time.
Just as you say, even as readers, you become in a way part of that audience for the spectacle described in the book. Got a lot of listeners calling in here. Louise in Newton, Massachusetts. Thanks for calling, Louise. You're on the air.
Hi, John.
Hi. What do you know, Louise? Hello?
I don't hear. What'd you say?
Hello, Louise. Are you there? What do you know about the book?
Yes, I am.
What's your story?
Okay. My story is I'm a middle school librarian for over 25 years in Newton, and still working as a librarian. I read The Hunger Games when it came out in 2008. I thought it was riveting. I couldn't put it down. The kids were not particularly interested in it. It has sat around for quite a while. And then suddenly, with all the media hype, everyone wants to read it. And my concern is the 7 to 11-year-olds that are reading it and the sixth-grade teachers who are recommending it to all of their students, and the kids say they have to read it because everyone's reading it.
Why is that a matter of why is that a matter of concern to you, Louise?
Well, I think that kids might understand the words, but I don't think that they understand the concepts, and I think it's extremely violent. I noticed in the UK that unless some scenes were taken out, that they were going to make it PG-15.
Mm-hmm. And they did.
I don't think it's age appropriate. I don't believe in censorship, but on the other hand, I think the media has hyped it up so much, and these kids are really quite young to understand the violence that's in the book, the messages that are there, and you know, maybe they do watch some of that reality show, but I think it's just more age appropriate. I think it was meant for YAs. And that's where it belongs.
YAs, young adults, and what does that mean to you age-wise, Louise, as a librarian?
Well, you know, it used to mean at Brown Middle School it meant something different. Now it's more 12-year-olds up to adults. But I don't see sixth graders who are 11 and kids younger. I've seen in the newspaper children who are at 7 and 8. Who have read the book and, you know, want to see the movie. So,
Louise, let me hold that thought right there. A librarian worried about the age of some of the kids reading it. Certainly, people of all kinds of ages have ended up reading it. Let me get one more right here, if I may. Robin in Lexington, Massachusetts. Robin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have two things that I'd love to hear your guests discuss. One is, I read all three books with my daughter last year.
How old is she?
We read them she was 11
okay.
at the time.
Okay.
And I think the books are terrifically written, which is not a common thing in children's literature. We enjoyed them a lot. They mm-hmm. are very violent, but that's probably why I chose to read them with her. But that's not really what I want to discuss.
Yeah.
There are two things that I'd love to hear your guests address. One is that as I've had time to think about what these books contain. It strikes me that the sort of far-fetched, futuristic, post-apocalyptic version, way in which we're being asked to view this kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
is to me kind of ironic because I feel like there is a way in which this is not far-fetched and the way in which there is a political parallel with young people, teenagers in the poorest of our communities who are killing themselves right now. And we're watching that on television, not in a theatrical way, but we're watching it every day. In general, the poor kids in our communities are going off to war and getting killed, and we are watching that every day. And the question, to me, in some ways, we are already sacrificing the young people, while there are people who are wealthier who are benefiting from these scenarios.
Yeah.
That's one point that
okay.
I'd love to hear
okay.
addressed.
And your second, Robin?
The second point is that that I've seen a few people comment on, but I haven't heard on this show so far, is in the story, the image of Pan Am and the people who live there is very much sort of framed as negative, with their emphasis on outlandish appearance, on fashion, on conspicuous consumption. And there just seems to be such irony in the way the movie is being marketed and the way the stars are being paraded out. What are they wearing? What are they doing? And there's just tremendous irony in the way in which that the movie industry and parallels the elitism of Pan Am in the books.
Well, and of course,
I would be very interested in hearing comments on either one of them.
Absolutely, we'll pick them both up. That's a great, great, Robin. Thanks for your call. I mean, we have here that kind of dressing up, primping up, even for Deathmatch is the story in the book. I mean, Lev, let me come first to you with this Robin's observation about how, in a way, what's in The Hunger Games is a version of our life now. Is that always the case in dystopic books, young adult or otherwise? Is it more the case in this one, Lev?
I think maybe a little more the case. It's good to hear from Robin in Lexington, my hometown.
All right.
It's very, very ironic to watch the movie of this book participate in the kind of culture, precisely the kind of culture that it is criticizing. There's this immensely theatrical scenes where Katniss is being primped and put on display, and you see the exact same thing with the celebrities that are in the movie. It reminds me a lot of the marketing of the movie about the Lorax, where that image, that character gets slapped on products that are maybe not the most environmentally responsible of products. There's a lot of irony there, and yeah, it's repeated in the Hunger Games movie, and I just hope kids could be made a little bit hip to that, because it's a very real irony.
What about the age issue that our librarian caller raises? 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, being 6th graders then, a little older, being encouraged by their teachers to read it.
Above all, for me, the Hunger Games is about aggression. Not necessarily about explicit violence, people stabbing each other. It's about the kind of aggression that you see in junior high schools, which are just snake pits of aggression, more social aggression than physical aggression, but very real. I have a daughter who's 7, and I wouldn't let her anywhere near these books. But when she gets a bit older, 7th, 8th, 9th grade, I think reading these books is a good way to help kids get a sense of and understand and process the kind of aggression they see going on around them in the classroom and on the playing fields.
Betsy, maybe in a bigger arena than that, we should give us a sense. You've got a little reading there, I think, where Katniss has been selected, or I should say she's taken the place of her sister who was selected to be in these deathmatch games, and she's prepping for TV interviews here with the kind of former Hunger Games over-the-hill champ alcoholic Haymitch is Katniss's coach. And the run-up to the games, she has Haymitch, I guess, preparing her for her first TV interview. Could you read a little bit? He starts off speaking here.
Yes. So, right, this is Katniss and Haymitch preparing for a TV interview, and he's trying to find the sort of angle that she should present. So he says...
This is Woody Harrelson in the movie playing Haymitch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I'm trying to figure out what to do with you, he says, how we're going to present you. Are you going to be charming, aloof, fierce? So far, you're shining like a star. You volunteered to save your sister. Cinna made you look unforgettable. You've got the top training score. People are intrigued, but no one knows who you are. The impression you make tomorrow will decide exactly what I can get you in terms of sponsors, says Haymitch. Having watched the tribute interviews all my life, I know there's truth to what he's saying. If you appeal to the crowd, either by being humorous or brutal or eccentric, you gain favor. The next hours are agonizing. At once it's clear I cannot gush. We try me playing cocky, but I just don't have the arrogance. Apparently I'm too vulnerable for ferocity. I'm not witty, funny, sexy, or mysterious. By the end of the session, I am no one at all.
By the end of the session, I'm no one at all, but she's made up for this public display. Let's hear another little bit from the movie. Here's a scene from the movie Katniss, played by Jennifer Lawrence, is very accurate with a bow from her poaching time, and sort of like the Appalachians, I guess. But she's terrified as she prepares to hunt and be hunted in a human kind of gladiator game. Gale, played by Liam Hemsworth, gives her courage, and she extracts from him a promise to help her family if she fails, dies.
Listen to me. You're stronger than they are. You are. Get to a bow.
They may not have...
Well, if you show them how good you are. They just want a good show. That's all they want. If they don't have a bow, then you make one, okay? You know how to hunt.
There's 24 of us, Gale. Only one comes out.
Yeah. And it's gonna be you.
Okay.
Take care of them, Gale. Whatever you do, don't let them starve.
Let's go.
I'll see you soon, okay?
Don't let them starve. The stakes are high as they get here. Life, death, starving to death. Peter in Columbia, South Carolina. Peter, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling. I'm representing, I guess, the older target audience for this book. I'm a college student. I'm 20. Mm-hmm. And this book is very popular in college. I was hanging out with my friends last night. All of them were going to go and see the movie. Most of them had read the books. And I think this book kind of embodies our view of what a future is. Like, we don't have a very, I guess, bright vision of the future. Like, we live in a time where even with a college education, we don't have much of an opportunity to better ourselves, like, further than our parents or anything. And I'm not gonna lie, a lot of my friends are like, ooh, yay, zombie apocalypse or something like that. And this is a very grim future. Like, we see this in the Arab Spring and everything, and there are people, like, living a violent reality every day, like young kids like ourselves that go out and fight for food and everything else like that. So I think it's a very poignant summary of I guess, a younger opinion.
Yeah, Peter, I can't help but thinking that that must be part of what resonates here. Our librarian said media hype, but there's something going on here that is drawing people in. I mean, Betsy, do you share that feeling that this, in a way, is the world that you've been brought up and pointed into? Tough?
I mean, I think I do agree. And there is something really resonant about this sort of terrifying world that you feel like you're being thrust into and that Katniss is pretty much being thrust into. And I think I would speak to the caller Robin's point earlier when I would say that pretty much all good speculative fiction or, you know, more specifically dystopian fiction in my mind does have that kind of realism to it. It does really speak to something that's actually going on in our world or in our minds and our hearts, and that it really is about something very realistic and immediate in spite of being about a dystopia or science fiction or fantasy.
Lev, do you put this in line with Clockwork Orange and other dystopian tales before?
Sure. Absolutely. Brave New World, 1984. It really drills down to some of the really bitter bedrock realities of life right now. Even, and I would count myself among the book's older fans, and I'm 42. Mm-hmm. I grew up, you know, in the 70s and 80s when pop culture was all about free to be you and me, just be yourself, dream your dreams and everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. This just chucks that all out the window. Don't be yourself, for God's sake. You're screwed. You've just got to be who they want you to be. That's your only chance to get out of this thing alive. It's a much grimmer view of life, but who's to say it's not a little more accurate?
Does it make you sad to be reading that? You read it in your book club. If it's a bunch of 40-year-olds, are you holding your head in your hands and saying, oh, boy, what are we leaving these kids?
I agree. Science fiction, good science fiction, is never about the future. It's about the present. But I think this book, you know, it moves beyond that. It's not just about the presence. It's very, very similar to Lord of the Flies in a lot of ways. It really gets at these very difficult psychological realities, which are just not just transient political realities, but permanent realities of what it's like to be a human being. You're around these very aggressive other creatures. They're going to go after you. They're going to judge you on your appearance, not who you are. And you have to be hip to that. That's a fable for every age, unfortunately.
Lev Grossman with Time Magazine. Please stand by there in New York. Betsy Cornwell in South Bend, Indiana. We're going to come back, talk more, take your calls on The Hunger Games. We'll hear about the movie from an early review later in this hour. And you can join the conversation this hour. Have you read it? Has The Hunger Games wave hit you? And what's it all say about survival, love, rebellion, voyeurism? What's it say about power? About the reality TV generation. Have you pictured yourself fighting for your life, your family, alongside Katniss and Peeta and Gale in the Hunger Games? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about The Hunger Games, the blockbuster book franchise, hits the big screen today. A generation and more has already been steeped in the dystopian survival challenge and violence of the story. Lev Grossman is with us from Time Magazine. Betsy Cornwell's here from South Bend, Indiana, a grad student at University of Notre Dame, who's been paying attention to The Hunger Games as well. Here's fans lined up last night in Los Angeles for the midnight showing, saying they couldn't wait to get in.
As soon as they went on sale, we got them. Yeah. We had to.
It's like one of the biggest movies, books ever.
I think it's amazing to be here. It's my first premiere, and it's just a great experience to, like, one day maybe tell our children about The Hunger Games, you know?
You can join the conversation right now. Are you in line for the movie? And is this the story that's helping a generation process the rough world they're being left? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Lev Grossman, would you read a little bit from it for us just to get a sense of, I mean, they go into battle a lot here, and it's a bloody battle. You got a little bit, I think, where, you know, reminding us it's teenager pitted against teenager fighting to the death for their lives, for food, for their families. And this is, I think, a piece where Katniss is describing the action around her, Lev.
That's right. This is from the very first battle when the games have just begun. A boy, I think from District 9, reaches the pack at the same time I do. They're fighting over these backpacks that have resources in them. And for a brief time, we grapple for it. And then he coughs, splattering my face with blood. I stagger back, repulsed by the warm, sticky spray. Then the boy slips to the ground. That's when I see the knife in his back. Already, other tributes have reached the cornucopia and are spreading out to attack. Yes, the girl from District 2, 10 yards away, running toward me. One hand clutching a half dozen knives. I've seen her throw in training. She never misses, and I'm her next target. All the general fear I've been feeling condenses into an immediate fear of this girl, this predator, who might kill me in seconds. Adrenaline shoots through me, and I sling the pack over one shoulder and run full speed for the woods.
Lev Grossman reading from Susan Cornwell's The Hunger Games. Lev, I can't help but hear in that the violence of video games that we see so vivid, sort of jumping up here into literary form, young literary form.
Yeah, it's true. And I agree, and I say that as a big fan of games myself. But it has a different quality to me than games do. Game violence is still, it's a bit cartoonish. It's a bit weightless. You feel very aware that these are, you know, just big bunches of polygons on a computer screen that you're killing. The beings here in this book, as they do generally in novels, that's what novels are for, they feel very human. Novels are machines for really simulating human consciousness, and every person who dies in this book feels like a person. It really, to me, takes it to a different level of realism, one that I'd seen before in adult fiction, but never in young adult.
Let's go to our listeners, Julio, in New Milford, Connecticut. Julio, thanks for calling.
Thanks, Tom. My comment revolves around it's funny, I'm 42 years old, too.
Okay.
Like your guest.
Yep.
I'm calling mostly about my son and his friend. My son read all three, all of the books, and his buddy, who is a reluctant reader, his parents were commenting to me the other day, couldn't put it down. It's the first book, and they're both 11. The first book that he had picked up and not been able to put down, even to the point where he would read the book during recess, despite pressure, you know, peer pressure from his friends, say, you know, put that book down, come on and play. What are you doing reading during recess?
What do you think it is about the books, Julio, that grabs an 11-year-old like that?
That's a great question. You know, I haven't had that conversation with my son. I have not read the books myself either. I think that I will now. This friend's mom did read it with him, and she was riveted by them. His dad didn't read it with him either. And it's funny that his dad and him and my son and I are going to go see the movie today or after school. We're going to pick the kids up from school and go straight to see it. And I hope to watch it. I hope to read it after watching it. But I'll ask him. I'm going to ask him that question.
Yeah, Julio, I appreciate your call. Fascinating. I mean, many people, many ages have been gripped by this thing, a story that's really tough. Lots of response online here. Susan says her 13-year-old son paid for the book with his own money, couldn't put it down. This is a kid who's afraid to walk down into the basement alone, she says, and she wonders if it's his way of working out all his fears in the safety of his bedroom with this book. Shava writes to us, you know, that has worked with youth internationally and in low-income situations in the U.S. as well, says their daily reality is not so different from something like The Districts, the story in The Hunger Games, and maybe that's a piece of it as well. Meg in Acton, Massachusetts. Meg, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I also think that one of the things this book does is it gives you a chance to talk about moral courage. And it gives you a chance to sort of, I mean, my son has read it, and we have discussions about media and media culture and how we all participate in it and we all co-construct it. And what is our responsibility within that? And how do we make moral decisions?
As the audience, in effect, to whatever we're consuming in media, do you mean, Meg?
Right. Witnesses bear responsibility. So it's what you will watch. And it's fascinating to watch the characters in here try to maintain, particularly Katniss and Peeta, maintain some sense of humanity. And how they do that, and that it is an incredible struggle for them to do so. And I think it teaches something about bravery. And it leads to wider discussions about, for example, that childhood is not the same for everybody, that there is inequality and grade stratification, and that, in a sense, the Hunger Games go on around us all the time. And we're just euphemizing it and not looking at it.
I mean, which is a political message
as well.
A political message, a social message. I mean, Elizabeth Banks is in this movie, plays Effie, and I recently read her saying, "Look, this is the 99%, the 1%. This is the struggle the country is dealing with in some ways."
It just helps kids, I think things critically, and they're going to have to think very critically about their media consumption, how they're portrayed, how they participate in the portrayal of others as well, and they're going to have to constantly process it. And this was an opportunity to talk about how to take that apart, right? And what one's responsibility should or should not be. How violence itself is either portrayed or celebrated in our culture in ways that should be critiqued, and the ways in which the real violence is euphemized here. For example, everybody in their district is forced to watch their heroes play, but they don't want to, right? For them, it's not a celebration. So it's also very much about learning how we have ties to each other and how people are hurt sometimes through those ties.
Is it a distant,
a complicated message, I think.
Yes, but as Lev Grossman and Betsy say, whether in social media or in reality TV, I mean, we are all sort of one another's audiences in so many ways these days, and then we have our kind of version of gladiators put out there. Does it seem like a distant allegory or an intimate allegory to our time to you, Meg? I think I lost Meg right there. Betsy, I'll put that same question to you, whether this is supposed to be set in the far future, but do the issues that they're grappling with seem distant or near to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think they seem very immediate, as I think we were talking about earlier in the hour. These are all, right, that idea of connection, and as the caller put it, moral courage, I think is right. There's a point right before the game where Peeta says, you know, I don't want them to get to that part of me. If I'm going to die, I want it to be as the person I am. You know, and he's convinced that he's not going to survive. So that is a sort of bravery in the face of hopelessness that is really beautiful, and that can be, you know, a really positive lesson for kids if we're looking for lessons for kids in this book. I know for me personally, I really like that it's a book that asks me to think about these issues and that asks young people to think about these issues. I'd always rather read a book that asks me to think about things than that tells me what to think.
Where the stakes are large here, plenty of violence, a little romance. Lev, you've said not as much as you might have been accustomed to coming up in an earlier time with dystopic novels, maybe. There's a bit, I think you have back-to-back readings with Betsy here, but there's a bit where Katniss is taking care of the boy Peeta. He's also from her district. The baker's son has helped out her family in the past, and there's a spark of romance here that's been smoldering, bursts into flame. Could you read a little bit for us, Lev?
Sure. Impulsively, this is Katniss and Peeta, impulsively I lean forward and kiss him, stopping his words. This is probably overdue anyway, since he's right. We're supposed to be madly in love. It's the first time I've ever kissed a boy, which should make some sort of impression, I guess. But all I can register is how unnaturally hot his lips are from the fever. I break away and pull the edge of the sleeping bag up around him. You're not going to die. I forbid it. All right? All right, he whispers.
And Betsy, this kiss is not just from their own romance, but it's their awareness they are being watched, and they need, in this game, the sympathy of the audience to help them succeed. Can you read on for us, Betsy?
Yeah, that's right. So they're trying to get sponsors, people in the audience, to send them food and things to help keep them alive. In order to do that, they have to gain their sympathy. So this is right afterward. I step out in the cool evening air, just as the parachute floats down from the sky. My fingers quickly undo the tie, hoping for some real medicine to treat Peeta's leg. Instead, I find a pot of hot broth. Haymitch couldn't be sending me a clearer message. One kiss equals one pot of broth. I can almost hear his snarl. You're supposed to be in love, sweetheart. The boy's dying. Give me something I can work with. And he's right. If I want to keep Peeta alive, I've got to give the audience something more to care about. Star-crossed lovers desperate to get home together. Two hearts beating as one. Romance. Never having been in love, this is going to be a real trick.
There, Betsy, reading from The Hunger Games. But this has really resonated with a game who's with a generation, a readership, whose lives are, in many ways, have been open theater on Facebook and in so many social media settings. Nancy in Brandon, Vermont. Nancy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I just want to add my name in age. I'm 62, and I felt that that was one of the most intriguing books I've ever read. It almost even changed my politics about warriors. I've always been a little anti-war, but when you understand that some people have nothing left to lose, then we're mighty grateful to have warriors. And I do think it's very true, it's very current, maybe not in the United States as much as in some of the war-torn areas around the world.
And so warriors, but warriors in what mission here, Nancy? Warriors, these are warriors trying to what, feed their families? Or are they in effect?
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, I used to be like questionable about war, but I think that people who live in such oppressed states are very fortunate to have warriors who will go to war, not the children who are called to war, but the people who are rebelling and revolting against that.
That could be in Tahrir Square. That could be a lot of places. Lev Grossman, are these warriors fighting for justice, or are they fighting for the entertainment of the powerful?
Well, I think the most important thing about the fighting that goes on in this book, and it's one of the big themes of the book I don't see discussed very much, is that everything that Katniss does, she is forced to do. And it's not just the fighting. There's a funny way in which she is forced to put on pretty dresses.
Yeah, even the loving.
And look pretty. She is forced to eat this delicious food, yum, yum, but she has no choice but to eat it. She is forced to go out and kill and be aggressive, and she is forced to kiss the boy. She doesn't want to. She's not interested in him, or not at first. She doesn't want to. She is so divorced from her own desires, from what she would like to do. I don't even know if she knows herself. Everything she does is an act. It's according to a script that has been handed to her and forced down her throat.
Lev, Betsy, stand by. With us right now from Los Angeles is Claudia Puig. She's a film critic for USA Today, and she has seen the film that a lot of people are lining up for right now, The Hunger Games. Claudia, thanks so much for being with us. What did you make of the film?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I liked it. And unlike many of your callers, I was not a huge fan of the book, but I do very much like the film. I didn't completely get the appeal of the book. I certainly understand it, but I didn't feel that the book was all that well written. But mm-hmm. I have to say that the film is a lot more imaginative and vivid, and I think that's largely due to the world that director Gary Ross creates. It's a somber feeling film. It moves at not a breakneck pace, which is unusual for what will probably be a huge blockbuster. It's 2 hours and 22 minutes. It spares us kind of the drone of Katniss's interior monologue, but it's a really taut and a powerful action film that keeps this palpable sense of tension. I was tense for 2 hours and 22 minutes watching this. And I think that certainly the satiric nature comes across, or the commentary on society comes across, but I think that there are two things that make it a really powerful film, and that's spot-on casting and this visual flair for creating the contrast of the worlds, the very grim post-apocalyptic worlds of all the districts as opposed to the capital, which is this horribly debauched, decadent place. But the casting of Jennifer Lawrence, I think, was pretty brilliant.
I loved her in Winter's Bone. She can play tough or rough and tumble realm. She's all right with.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it seems like that was a perfect training for something like this. She comes across steely and determined, as Katniss, the character, is written on the page. I find her more appealing in the film. There seems to be she communicates some depth or some believable warmth that I didn't really read on as much on the page. But she has the steeliness and this vulnerability, and we also believe her as a tough action heroine. And she has an athletic quality. I mean, everything about her works really well, and I think the supporting cast is also very good. I think the production designer, Philip Messina, did a great job with creating this world, particularly in this sort of, overly wigged, kind of crazy, brightly hued world of the capital, and then also the darker dystopian world. The cinematographer, Tom Stern, did a great job. There's a shaky camera bit that starts at the beginning that you're kind of wondering why now, and then eventually you understand more. Elizabeth Banks and Stanley Tucci are, they get to chew the scenery, but they really come off as these unctuous, garish officials.
Claudia, let me ask you, Gary Ross did Pleasantville and Seabiscuit and Big. Is this one, The Hunger Games, is it a youth movie? Is it an all-ages movie? How would you describe it?
Well, that's the problem. That is probably one of the issues I have with it. It is rated PG-13. And, we all know that nobody adheres to that. No one says, PG-13, that means nobody under 13 can go. This is just a recommendation. If parents really paid attention to that recommendation, I think more than any other film that's out there, they really should pay attention to this recommendation. As one of your earlier callers, the librarian, said, this is not something that 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds should be seeing.
Claudia Puig, we're out of time right there, but I really appreciate your conveying a little bit about the movie itself. It's opening all over today. Claudia Puig with USA Today. Thanks for joining us, Claudia.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Betsy Cornwell, grad student at Notre Dame, joining us from South Bend today. Thank you so much, Betsy, for your thoughts on The Hunger Games.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
And Lev Grossman with Time Magazine, author of The Magician King. Lev, it's always great to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for being here. Here again from the soundtrack, Birdie with Just a Game. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.